Afternoon.
You enjoying your time here in New Zealand? How many times have you been here now?
This is the third time.
Third time?
Yeah, 3 years ago. Wow, 3 years ago already, yeah. Yeah, that was my first time over here. Yeah.
Now, I understand you've been throwing darts since 1984. How did you get into it?
My dad, he was a carpenter, and he did some things for a bar named the Entertainer Bar in The Hague, in Holland. And he used to bring me every Friday afternoon, you know, when he was sitting there with a couple of friends, and I was getting darts from the bartender behind the bar, and then just start playing darts. It just and there was a guy over there, and he said, "Well, you're a bit talented. Can I bring you to tournaments?" You know, he asked my dad, and he says, "Can Ray come with me?" And after 3-4 tournaments, I won the Rotterdam Open. So yeah, a big talent at the time. So and since then, I start traveling a lot. You know, most of the time in my own country, and then a couple of years later in Europe, and starting making name there. And in 95, I reached the final of the World Championship and won it in 98. So 5 world titles so far now, yeah.
Was it a big sport in the Netherlands back in 1984?
No.
Was it a big sport in Britain, was it?
Yeah, but as soon as we got cable TV later in Holland, you know, we would never ever watch the darts in England. We never knew there was a competition in darts. We all hit 3 darts in a dartboard whenever we come. You did it, probably everyone did it, but I never knew there were competitions. As soon as we got cable TV in Holland, we were watching Anglia and BBC, you know, so we all see a totally new sport in on television, and it was exciting. But it wasn't never ever popular in Holland at the time, though.
So who were those dart players that you looked up to, that you admired, that you thought, one day I'd love to play them, one day I'd like to be like them?
Eric Bristow, Bob Anderson, Jockey Wilson, John Lowe, Dave Whitcomb, and Cliff Lazarenko. Those were the most common names at the time. Yeah, Eric Bristow was at that time, he was probably the best. And when I start playing, Bristow was more often not the best player, so it was Bob Anderson, John Lowe at the time. And then I started playing myself, you know. I was meeting these guys every month. Yeah.
How many days a week were you practicing? How much time were you putting into it?
Every day.
You just fell in love with it?
Yeah. Just when I came out of school, I put my back in a corner, did my homework, and then practice. We never had like telephones in these times, you know. We never had social media. We just had radio and TV, cable TV. That was it. Nowadays, all these kids have their own TV on their sleeping room. You know, I never had a TV in my sleeping room. So the only thing what you did was practicing. And well, for me, that went well. Yeah.
You never dreamed of growing up and being a professional footballer?
Of course, everyone does in Holland. But after a couple of years, I said no football for me. I wasn't good enough.
When you first started back in 1984, did you ever dream that you would be world champion, that one day you'd be making a really good living throwing darts as a profession?
The thing is, I always felt I had a world championship in me, funny enough. I don't know where that feeling came from, but I always had that feeling. Later I will become someone special, like I'm earning money from this sport, and that's what happened. And if you believe and if you dream, you know, dreaming is very important in this. If you have no dreams, you know, you can't accomplish anything.
We were mum and dad. Did mum and dad encourage you, or did mum and dad want you to go and become a carpenter
job? Well, my dad became a lorry driver, and he saw that he was making good money, so he always supported me in darts, of course. But he said, if you don't make it, you always can be a lorry driver in England or whatever. So I started doing lorry drive lessons, but I never liked it, you know, so I grabbed my darts again, and then it went well, yeah.
Why do you think you had a bit of a natural talent for it?
I can't tell you. I think everything started with me with dreaming, you know. I wanted to dream, and nearly all my dreams came through, yeah.
So the dreams got you out of bed every day. What about those days when maybe things didn't go so well, where you just weren't hitting the numbers that you wanted to hit, or the tournaments just weren't going your way? How did you deal with the bad times?
hard. Even now, it's hard because there's so many good players. You know, every time you have to focus. It's not easy if you lose. It happens more often than in the early years. I still don't have the right answer on that. The advantage of that is that every week there's a new competition. So say if you lose 1 week, next week later, you can perform. You can perform again in another competition. So because the PDC is organizing so many events, so that's the big advantage. But I hate losing. I don't think there's any sportsman in the world who doesn't hate losing. But for me, it's something different, and I don't like it at all. No.
Of the five world championships you've won, is there one that's more important than the other, or is there one that stands out? Is there one more special than the other?
I think the first one, because with that title, I could give up my life as a postman. I start getting a professional career back then, and the post office they will give me all the time I need to become a professional darts player. If you look. For me, the best final I ever played was against Phil Taylor in 2007. Yeah,
was it a big sport in the Netherlands when you won that first title?
Or
did you put it on the map in the Netherlands?
Yeah. When I came back in '98 in the aircraft, when we landed at Schiphol Airport, it was looking like the Beatles were arriving. The Beatles ever went to Holland in the 60s, I think, or 70s, and whole Holland went mad, and everyone was there on Schiphol Airport. When I won in 98 and 99, it looks exactly the same. We got a population over 15 million back then, and at least 5 million saw my final. So every one out of three persons saw my final. That was amazing.
And how did you handle that? How did you handle the business side of it and the celebrity side of it?
It was complete new, for me. I didn't have a management. What do I do? How do you get sponsors? And pretty soon after that, people call me. I want to be your manager. We can earn money. We can do this. We can do that. And since that, I started a professional career. Yeah.
Initially, though, with all of those, the business side of it, the celebrity side of it, did it affect your performance at all? Did things become maybe not as clear as they once were?
What I always notice is if you got time to think, as long as you're busy, exhibitions, following day a tournament, then a tournament, exhibitions, you can't think. But as soon as you got time to think, you're thinking, what the hell happened to me, I cannot do this, I'm just a postman. and then you have issues because you're thinking, can I do this again? And I did a year later. And then at a tough time between 2000 and 2003, so 3 years running at Lakeside, quarterfinal, second round, first round. So when I lift the trophy in 2003 again, in 2005. Yeah.
What was the reason for that tough period of time? Was it just a mental block? Was it a psychological thing?
I think so. I had one match one day at against Phil Taylor. It was a head-to-head back in London, and he beat me at 21-10. And after that, I had a tough time, So that was in 2000. That game was in November 2000, no, 99. And in 2000, I played Chris Mason in the first round of the Lakeside, and he beat me as well. So after 2 years becoming a world champion, then you go from hero to zero again.
Do you have a coach? Do you have somebody that can help you maybe look at your technique or take some of the guesswork out?
No.
So how do you know if there's little subtle things that you...
You don't know.
You don't?
you just try.
You don't look at video
material
or anything?
Even now, my career is already 30, 34 years old now. Even now, I still try all and everything to get better, There's nothing wrong with that, to try things out, because... at the moment, the players are so talented, they are so good, they give you so much pressure. Normally, if you play in a major event, if you reach the top eight, you think, oh, wow, now I've got a player I have to look after, I'll have to look out. The first two rounds, you already, you did it quite easy. But now, first round, already finals, If you look at the world match play, Joe Cullen, I played him in the first round, I beat him, but he's a fantastic player, he could have beat me if he finished 1-5-2 and 1-40 finish. So nowadays everyone is dangerous, and back then normally you had 16 good players, and then the rest was okay. We were good players, but in a best of five sets, you know, like a world championship, it was hard for them to beat us. Yeah.
When you look at the party atmosphere, look at the entertainment side of darts. How much has that changed from say the '80s, the '90s, to what we're seeing now? With the costumes, with the music,
sometimes,
with the introductions.
Well, sometimes I think, do they come for the darts, or do they come for themselves and try to promote themselves on TV, you know, and show everyone around? But I don't know, really. Do they watch?
Is it hard to focus, though? Do you look around and go, that is a really, really funny costume, or you're just straight into professional mode? You don't even notice it?
You don't see it. Sometimes you see it back on TV. If I watch my game back, I don't do that very often, but if I watch one of my games back, I see, I think, crazy people, you know. But that's the thing, you know, that everyone wants to go.
Yeah.
And, it is amazing wherever you go, even here in Auckland as well, you know. The last 2-3 years, we're amazing here. Everyone is happy that they see us.
Do you like the introductions, though, with the eye of the tiger and the box and the billing? Does the adrenaline still go?
Yeah. That never stops.
You've got to learn to control that, I'd imagine.
You can't really, you know. You try to say to yourself and to your body, oh, this is it, we did it so many times. But every venue and every town or every city or country is different. When you arrive here in Auckland and you arrive on stage, you see the happiness in the crowd's faces, you know. They always see you on TV, and now they see you in real life, you know. They nearly can touch you. And if you see their faces, that's amazing. The happiness in their faces, and they are so proud to see you in real life. And you want to perform at your best then.
When you're getting up there and you're preparing to throw, and you throw your first couple of darts, do you sort of get a sense early on whether it's going to be your night or not, whether your nervous system's up, whether you're throwing well? Have you got time to come right?
Not really, you know. Like I said earlier, the pressure is immense, you know. As soon as you're on stage, you have to be there and play the best game you can. If it's not your night, it's hard to get back in your focus again, in concentration.
Now, the distance from the dartboard never changes, but do you come into some environments where just, you know, you often hear football players when they've got to step up and take a penalty. In some grounds, the goal just looks bigger. In other grounds, it looks smaller, and they think, there's no way I can score. Do the dartboards sometimes appear to be bigger or smaller?
I think the height is always correct. Sometimes you have trouble in the distance or light. When we played the World Series in Las Vegas, you know, it wasn't the light wasn't very, very good, not very bright. So, or someone put one or two doors open, and then it's a lot of draft. You know, when we played in Vegas, it was 46 degrees, you know. So they had to put the air conditioning on, otherwise everyone it looks like a sauna there. So they put the air conditioning on, which is not good for throwing darts, of course.
The mathematics, having to do the numbers in your head, how long did it take you to learn it, to master it, where it's just like, bang, I know I've got a triple 20.
Just study the posters, you know. When I start playing, you had these finishing posters, you know, say like 76, 3 times 20, double 8. It's just like teaching yourself and just playing a lot of 5-1 games. And then years, you know, you have a finish on the post. It says 75. It says triple 15, double 15. But that isn't the right way to go. Because if you hit triple 15 and you hit a big 15, you can't finish with one dart in your hand, right? So the new option is triple 17, double 12. So I changed it at all in Holland, and now the post was good again. But I have to learn. And I always say to people in Holland, you know, I always drove on a wobbly road, you know, and I put a really good track for everyone else after me. But I'm still on a wobbly road myself.
Now, obviously, initially targeting always the triple 20s or the double 20s. Mm. Outside of that, is there a particular quarter of the board that you prefer to play?
Not really.
You don't get a choice in it?
Not really, no. In the 90s, 2000, you know, I always went for double 18. It helped me out big time a lot of times, but now double 20, double 12, and double 16 are my favorite numbers now, because every dart in your hand, if you've got 3 darts in your hand, tops, double 10, double 5, double 12, double 6, double 3, or double 16, double 8, double 4, you have to tell yourself and put yourself on those three numbers, because every dart in your hand can be really important. You know, if you are on double 18, big 18, big 9, you still got one dart in your hand left. You can't do nothing with it. You can't finish, you know. So 40, 32, and 24 are basically the three out shots for me.
How technical is darts?
Don't know, really. The only thing I know is as long as you think, you're gone. You try not to think.
It's just intuitive.
Yeah, when I had my first golf lessons, you know, and the golf player said to me, Ray, you have to do this and do this and look at the ball. I'm thinking, wow, every time. I was thinking and thinking. I was really bad. As soon as I try not to think, I was hitting the ball. Darts is the same, you know. If you try, how do I hold a dart? You're gone, you know. Just grab a dart in your hand and just throw and see what the dart does. Or stand different, you know. But then I have to escort you to a dartboard. That's not easy to just speak about on a radio interview. Yeah.
And are the darts standardized in terms of weight, or is there a variety and the dart that you use depends on who you are as an individual?
No, I always use the same. Yeah, 25 grams. But I switch once in a while. But if you look at Simon Whitlock and Peter Wright, you know, that they change every week, I think. So, but you can't blame them, you know. Some players are so extremely good, like Phil Taylor, Michael Van Gerwen, Gary Anderson. For the last 2-3 years, the players are so good, winning so much trophies, so much tournaments. So you have to improve yourself, or it could be a longer shaft or a shorter shaft. Suddenly the darts go in a way better, you know. So why not trying? We have to do that on the practice board at home. And as soon as you got out here, you're hoping to have the right setup and playing well.
How easy is it, how difficult is it when you don't play the perfect darts, when you throw a bad dart, to just put that out of your head and then just get ready with
the next one? Not easy if you say 3 hours of practice, and then you go on stage and in three practice hours you hit 180s and 140s and 180s and all the finishes. As soon as you go up stage, and it's not happening.
So you'll practice up to 3 hours before a tournament?
Yeah.
And how much of a break before you go on?
Not really.
You have a bit of a routine that works for you?
Yeah. I do some finishes. I do some high scoring. Most of the time with Michael Van Gerwen on one board, you know, we do 1-2-1s with 9 darts, finish to 170s. I start at 121 and I leave a double, then Mike hits it. Then we go to 122, 123, 124. You get 9 darts together, finish, and then we go one number up. At the time, you come in all certain finishes, you know. Every finish you get, and that works fine for me. But then suddenly on stage it's different, because Michael is a very fast player. I like to play fast players like Gary Anderson, Michael Van Gerwen, but Peter Wright and Phil Taylor are a little slow, so you don't come in your rhythm.
Can you play psychological warfare on stage? Can you slow a game down? Can you try and change the rhythm of your opponent?
100%.
And that's acceptable?
Not for me, but I always play my own game. But there are players in the past as well, you know, who did all and everything against you to get you out of your rhythm. And sometimes it works and sometimes not.
I'd imagine you travel the world, you're with these guys all the time. Yeah. Most of you good friends most of the time?
Friends is a big word. We don't see each other in private life, you know. So we see each other almost every week, sometimes 3-4 days a week. So we go along fine. Some players have issues sometimes, and 1 week later they're fine again. So friends is a big word, but we go along fine. I go along fine with Mike Van Gerwen.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. Now another Dutchman coming in and doing some great things in darts. You're sort of having to share that stage, little bit within Holland. Yeah. How have you found that?
Mike?
Yeah, just the fact that now there's two of you, two superstars out of your country.
Well, it was hard for me to become not the best player in the world. That's Phil Taylor. So I was always thinking to myself, well, at the end, I'm the best player in Holland, but that's not given to me as well. So that's Michael now.
So your own popularity, you've created, forced this generation to take up darts, and now some of these guys are maybe starting to beat you.
Yeah, but Michael is amazing.
Yeah.
Michael is, he's not thinking. You know, that doesn't mean he doesn't have brains. That's not the way what I mean. But what he do perfect is not to think about it. You know, if he hits 180, and he hit 141, he started the next leg 140, 180, 180, triple 20, triple 19, and he missed two $9 on the spin in a world championship one day. So if you hit a 9-darter, everyone will think, wow, a 9-darter, you know. So, and he doesn't think, he just go with the next leg. Yeah.
Let's talk about the 9-darter. That is the pinnacle of darts, I would imagine. How many times have you done that on live TV, or how many times have you done that in career?
Five times.
Yep. Within the 9-darter, is there the perfect number? Is there the perfect score that you're then looking to try and target? I understand there are many combinations in terms of reaching 501 with 9 darts.
There are. Yeah, most of the time I hit two 180s and then triple 20, triple 19, double 12. I think on TV it went always like that. Yeah. But there are a lot of varieties. I don't know how many, but I've been told there are more than 100 varieties on a 9-darter. So you can start with, say, 167, 167, 167. Those three, one, three, one, six, seven finishes, you know, makes a 9-darter as well. So I always do it the normal way. Yeah.
We've always been aware in this country of Phil the Power Taylor, but darts has only become probably really popular here in the last 5 or 6 years. Yeah. Is there a particular tournament or a particular year that has led to this darts becoming this just global success?
Yeah, I don't know. It's getting popular and popular everywhere, you know. We never thought people in New Zealand could watch us playing, you know, like Premier League or World Championship. But even here in New Zealand, you got a couple of good players, you know. I'm playing Warren Perry. I know him for 2 decades now. He's a class player, you know. Cody Harris, number one in New Zealand. Rob Sabo, amazing players, and I saw Rob one day playing in the World Championship against Phil Taylor, and he really played well. So even here, there's big talent.
And just in regards to, you just mentioned here in New Zealand, yeah, putting darts to one side, growing up or over the last, you know, what did you always think of New Zealand when you thought about New Zealand?
I've always been told it was a great country, you know, great nature. I'm a big fan of the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit. So 2 years ago, I went to the Hobbiton, which was great. You know, I make photographs and everything there. So to me, that was a dream came true. You know, I'm an absolute big fan of them films. Mm. So when I got there, it was amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. How do you relax? What else are you into outside of darts?
Music.
Yep.
Music.
What sort of music?
80s, like the 80s, you know. I think that's the best time, the music, you know, and all these Hall & Oates, you know, and all these Duran Duran. I was loving it every time. Yeah, basically 80s, yeah.
And what about your family? What do your kids think of Dad being a professional darts player, this global sort of superstar?
One side are so proud, but there's another side as well. And the other side is that I'm not there for them.
Yep.
You know?
And that must be difficult, eh?
They're out house now, so they my youngest daughter has a baby coming now, and she has a 18-month-year-old grandson for me. So that's hard. You don't see them often. You can't go on a holiday with them again. You're always away. And for the next 5 years, I said to myself, you know, I'm not going to play all the tournaments every week because I want to spend some time with them.
Now, you're 50 years of age. Are you still motivated as ever?
Yeah.
So you've still got a lot more things you want to achieve in darts?
Yeah. A 6 world title will be perfect, or a nice Premier League. I still feel there is something in the pipe left. So, I'm going to try to do my best for the next 5 years, maybe 7 years, I don't know, to perform well and hopefully to win a couple of majors.
Does age catch up with you in darts?
Of course.
Yeah. It does?
Especially when you got diabetes like myself. Diabetes is a big sniper, you know. Sometimes you don't have a problem, and sometimes it's there. You got sweat or whatever, or hot.
And it can affect your eyesight, can't it?
My eyes as well. Sometimes I use glasses. Sometimes I'm fine. but it's not. It's up and down all the time, which it should be regulated, you know. Mm. And it's up and down with me every the time changes, the jet lags, you know, the food, the traveling all the time. It doesn't help.
We've mentioned it. Initially, darts big in Great Britain, massive in the Netherlands now because of the success of yourself and Michael. Big sport in Germany, starting to get a real foothold here in New Zealand and Australia. But as you travel the world, is there one particular part of the world or one particular country which you believe is the emerging nation?
Hard to say. I think Holland is still popular. Germany is still popular. I think Australia, New Zealand, yeah. The amount of things I heard, people approach me on the street. I think New Zealand is up for it, yeah. And a lot of good players over here. So let them come over and watch, you know. That's what I did in the 80s, you know. I was watching the Europe Cup in Den Haag, and I saw John Lowe winning with a fantastic 1-6-1 finish. And since that, I was gone. I was in love with the game.
And just for any young people listening to this interview this afternoon that have had their imagination captured by the Auckland Darts Masters or just simply watching darts on Sky television, what's your advice to them?
Advice is where you want to be from now. You know, if you want to be a dart player with some friends, you just hang out in a pub. But if you want to be the best or you want to be improved, you know, you have to start dreaming. I was dreaming every time. I saw myself winning and lifting trophies when I was in bed. Mm. So it all starts with a dream, where you want to be from now, you know, in 5 or 10 years' time.
Was money ever a motivating factor for you? Or
no.
Was that just that just the
byproduct? In 10 years, there wasn't any money involved. Trophies.
Are you amazed at how much there is now?
Oh, yeah. When I won my first world title, it was £32,000. Back in 98, and now it's £400,000, this world championship.
So and then there's sponsorship on top of that, exhibition events.
Yeah, so exhibitions. You can have a good living, you know. Everyone can see the Order of Merit of the PDC. It's not secret, but not all the events are in the ranking system because we got 6 or 7 majors every year, which is not in the Order of Merit, non-ranked events as well. And then your sponsors. So, Michael, Phil, and Gary, the last 3 years, they do doing amazing. Yeah.
Well, Raymond Van Barneveld, we really appreciate you joining us in studio. Thank you for the insight into darts and all the very best in your upcoming tournaments. And let's see if you can win that 6th World Championship in the future.
Cheers. Thank you. I hope you have a good run here. Yeah, thanks.